those are the stakes. Those are what is at stake. And the higher the stakes, the greater the tension of wanting your hero or heroine to succeed. This is Taylor Stevens, the New York Times bestselling and award-winning author of the kick-ass Vanessa Michael Monro thrillers, and this is the Taylor Stevens Show with Steve Campbell, where we are kicking writing in the butt one word at a time.
And Taylor, today we're going to talk about ramping up the tension in your writing, but before we get to that, I want to talk to you about Thriller Fest, because we were chatting online earlier today. You got back at like, dark 30 in the morning, on Monday morning, and you're trying to get caught up, but you must have had a good time while you were there.
It was a really good time. Exhausting, but good. I always forget how tiring it is and how fun it is at the same time. It's just a really good time of, you know, being able to, well, there's a lot of friends, because you make a lot of friends along the way through the year. So you're seeing friends that you haven't seen for a year, or you haven't seen since the last conference in between. And then new introductions. Thriller Fest is very industry oriented. So meeting new agents and editors and just people that you normally wouldn't come in contact with in everyday life, it's a lot of fun.
And so you got to hobnob with all of the publishing elite, I guess we could say, because that's who goes to Thriller Fest.
Yeah, I guess we could call it hobnobbing too.
And you you were part of a panel on Saturday. I don't remember what that's about, but to quickly tell us about that.
It was a pantsing or plotting panel, which I much prefer. It was very practical advice, and it sort of was a very good chemistry between all the panelists debate over what works for each individual and why. There are some people on the panel who are staunchly pantsers, and they can't even fathom doing any plotting. And then there's others who are plotters who are just like, pantsing is not the way to go. And what I took away from that is a lot of whether pantsing or plotting is the way to go has to do with what kind of book you're writing. Because some books, like a very complex thriller, like a Monro story, requires plotting to be able to get it tight before you don't lose all that time in the writing process. Whereas for someone who's writing a romance or someone who's writing more of a psychological thriller that has to do with family or whatever, the characters can lead the story, and plotting it all out might detract from some of that tension. So it was a very interesting thing for me to realize.
Yeah, I think that would have been a fun panel to sit in on and watch, because it's almost like a holy war, as you described. There's, you know, the people that do it one way just want to keep doing it that way, and the others just don't see it as that being the way to do it. And I know from talking to you in prior episodes that your plotting process is so in depth as you're developing all of this stuff. I think it's funny when you go to these panels, occasionally there'll be a panel on like how to plot your novel, and it's like a 45-minute panel. It's like, really? You have a 45-minute panel with four people talking, and somehow or other you're supposed to walk out of there with an understanding of how to plot your novel.
Yeah, that doesn't work, but it's fun.
We could talk about that. We could probably do a 12-episode series on your process for putting together a novel.
And that's just my process.
Yes.
Other people have different processes, you know?
Yes.
But it was fun because there were a few people who'd done it both ways. Because I've done both pantsing and plotting. And guy that called himself, a born-again plotter. And then there were some that had never done anything other than pants it. And so there were the hybrids too. It was a good conversation. It was fun.
Sounds like fun. What was the best thing you had to eat in New York City?
Okay, this is really stupid because we had some really good food. You know, when you're going to dinner with agents and editors and all of that, you're going to really nice places, and we did visit some really nice places. But in all the times I've been to New York, I've never eaten any food off the street. The street carts. And I was like, I'm going to do that this time. It's such a touristy thing to do, but I've got to do it. And there was this one, I mean, one of the things that they sell, it seems like all the carts basically sell the same thing, but one of these things is like a lamb, what do they call it? A hero? In that pita bread, the mm-hmm. lamb meat. So I had one of those and it was amazing. I could have just been really, really hungry, but it was shockingly good. So we'll just go with that.
Okay, so I'm picturing you at the food cart, and you're probably in your own mind thinking about what could be in this food. What is this person trying to do something? And you're ramping up the tension in your own mind. Anyway, that's my lousy tie-in to the topic today.
I was almost going to answer the question. I thought, no, I'm going to ruin the moment.
But we were chatting on Skype chat before we came online today about a particular problem that I was having with my current work, and you were offering some advice, and it's like, wow, this would make a great topic for a show. So that's what we're going to talk about. I'm writing scenes right now for a mystery novel called Reno's Debt, and I'm just essentially I'm writing information gathering scenes right now. I'm not writing it straight through. I'm just writing these scenes, and I'm wondering where the tension is going to come from, because she's a private investigator. The character Reno Hart is a private investigator. She's not in any danger. It's her client that's in danger. So you were asking me how it was going. I expressed my concern about this, and then you had some advice for me. And we'll get into that advice, but we've talked before on the show about the importance of tension no matter what you're writing.
Yes, conflict, keeping the conflict going.
So whether it's a romance or a thriller, obviously in thrillers, then, you know, it's just constantly being ramped up, or a mystery, even a cozy mystery. There has to be some form of conflict, some form of tension to keep the reader turning the page. And with what I'm writing right now, they're sort of like it's sort of like building a house, and, you know, I'm building, you know, one boring wall right now with all of these interviews, but it'll all come together into an interesting story. But in my own mind, I'm wondering how I'm going to ramp the tension up. So I was sort of letting you know where I was in the story, and you said, well, without knowing how the story evolved, you said any advice that I give you is going to be essentially worthless. And then you gave me some really good advice, which was, you know, the way that you can ramp up tension through inner thoughts. And something that had not occurred to me, and may have later on when I was adding more layers, as we've talked about in previous episodes, to the manuscript, the idea of doubt about what she's being told and how one thing doesn't necessarily lead to the next the way they do in TV mysteries. There's only right. an hour in a TV mystery, so one thing always leads to the next. But in novels, yes. one thing often leads to one blind alley after the next.
Yes, and often, like, especially in a situation where she's interviewing people, everybody that she's interviewing is likely going to have their own motivations of why they're willing to talk to her. And so you can add tension by creating interesting characters that they, whatever their topic is or their reason is for wanting to talk to her, it might not be the most honorable. It might not be where she trusts them completely and where she's not sure that what they're telling them her is the truth. And so by throwing out those little doubts, the reader doesn't know if it's a red herring. Heck, the writer might not know if it's a red herring. Mm-hmm. And so that can create tension. Another thing that can create tension in a situation like this is if she's running out of time. And of course, that has to be plot specific to the plot. You can't just throw that out in the middle of the story. But a ticking clock is always a really good way to build that sense of tension. If you don't figure this out by a certain amount of time, XYZ is going to happen. If she has distrust, both of her client or the people she's interviewing, or developing a sense of this is not what it really seems, then the reader knows that she's distrustful, but they're not privy to the why. Then when she does pull it all together and she draws connections, she'll seem really, really smart. So those are all little tiny things that you can interject through the writing process to build that sense of the unknown.
It's when I think of your books, I always think of, you know, Monroe always being in jeopardy, but that's not it's not always the case. There have been some stories where it's someone else, primarily yeah. someone else, who's in jeopardy. Yeah. And you use that to ramp the tension up. Of course, Monroe's such a physical character. There are certain things that she's going to do that my characters wouldn't do. But The situation with the doll, where Logan is in this horrible situation, and you know she's with this girl, and in The Innocent, it's they're going to rescue someone, and she puts herself in jeopardy. But those are quick scenes.
But here's the thing about all of that is underlying that is those are the stakes. Those are what is at stake, and the higher the stakes, the greater the tension of wanting your hero or heroine to succeed. So if your character doesn't have anything at stake in this, there's less tension overall, and you're going to have to create it somewhere else. And the way you can give her something at stake is emotionally, whether she, for some reason, she cannot fail, but she's afraid of failing. For some reason, this matters to her in a way that shouldn't really matter, but it does because of some past history. These emotional stakes can be, if they're done correctly, can be very good replacements for the physical stakes in a story that just doesn't have the physical stakes.
And that's exactly what the case is with my novel. It's exactly, almost to the point where I don't think I've told you the storyline for this, so you're not just answering my specific question, but that is exactly the situation that I have. The title is Reno's Debt. She has this debt that she has to repay. It's more an emotional debt than any. Someone had done something for her, and she feels this great sense of duty-bound honor to help her in a situation that she otherwise might not be interested in helping her.
So in that particular case, you create the tension by Reno's self-doubt of feeling that this case is just slipping between her fingers, that it doesn't seem like she's getting to where she needs to go to solve it. And that self-doubt weighs on her. But you have to do in a previous podcast, we talked about the different layers, and that's like a third layer of the fine brush strokes. You add that very judiciously, but that's guiding her motivations, that's guiding her choices, and it's going to increase the tension because we're going to feel her self-doubt as she expresses it.
You know, it's funny, and for listeners out there, you listen to these podcasts once. I listen to them while we're talking. I'm listening and I'm making notes, and then I edit the podcast. And a lot of times I get these gems that come out while I'm editing, things that I didn't hear while we were talking because I was taking notes or thinking, where are we going next with this?
And which is what makes you such an amazing producer, by the way.
Thank you. But, when we were talking, those podcasts that you were referencing back to, I think we did like a little two-part series on this process. And I got so much from that, and I actually was applying some of that while I was going through writing these scenes. It's like, okay, I'm just going to get the action down in these scenes, and then I'm going to go back and plug in the emotional layer afterwards and the inner dialogue. But I hadn't thought about ramping up the emotional stakes. It was sort of my idea from the very beginning, but then it went away. The idea went away, and I got into more like physical jeopardy. How do I put her in physical jeopardy? And that's not what these books are about.
Yeah, so you don't exactly, and that can always be a mistake of like trying to fix it by doing something that's outside the expectations for that story. Because then you're not writing that type of story anymore. You're creating something else, and that's going to completely change your plot line, completely change everything. So who is it? Sean, I forgot, in The Story Grid.
Yes.
He talks about how each type of genre has its constructs, its expectations. And if having all this physical danger and these physical stakes are not the expectations of what you're writing, it would be a mistake to throw them in there just to make it exciting. It will feel botched and like something's just been patchworked together.
And that's Sean Coyne that you're talking about, C-O-Y-N-E.
Yes.
And this is a great time to say that this will be the first show that's being produced and released on the new podcast part of your website.
So I haven't announced it yet. I need to tell everybody quick.
So what we have is we built a new part of Taylor's website that that contains all these podcasts, and we'll be able to put more information into show notes. So when we mention things like Sean Coyne's The Story Grid, now we can put links to it, and we can put covers, and you know, we can sort of flesh it out a little bit. And it really makes, I think, the episodes will become a lot more shareable on social media. So if you listen to these, we would love it if you would share them from the website, and we'll give you the link to that website at the
end. That should be our call to action today, Steve.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Oh, but that's cheating. We can't get into the call to action just yet. Now, and we'll probably forget because you're still tired from the trip.
Oh, my brain is so fogged. Which is amazing that we're getting like this advice, like, oh, I don't know where that came from, but I'm glad it's helpful.
It is. It is. And so let's talk about other books that you've written or that you've worked on. You talked at one time during the show about something that you had worked on or you had developed, a story about a woman. I guess I would describe it almost as a women's fiction kind of thing, not a thriller at all.
A suspense.
Okay. Yeah. But it's completely different than Monroe. So you would have been ramping up tension in a completely different way with that.
That would have been tension ramped up by the very high stakes of what she had to lose. But I'm thinking more specifically of the young adult novel that I did that still hasn't sold, and who knows if it ever will. But we've talked before about how, you know, someone gave me some very good advice and I had to end up just like tearing the whole thing apart and putting it back together. And one of the things that she had mentioned is the stakes weren't high enough for the characters. And pieces of the puzzle, the building blocks, were all there, but I hadn't properly utilized them. And in the case of these young characters' family, they would lose their families if they didn't succeed in what they set out to do. But realizing that I hadn't stated those stakes very clearly, as I was doing the rewriting, anytime there was a possibility to go into their inner thoughts, into their dialogue, their fears, their concerns, the decisions, why they were making the choices they were making, always that the stakes were reinforced, whether through simple thoughts or flashbacks or whatever it was, that fear of losing, that fear of loss was reinforced. So now the story as it is, you can tell that if they don't, there's a price to pay for winning or for losing. And so the emotional component is so much stronger, which builds the tension. So I think that's probably a more apt analogy to what you're dealing with right now than one of these, you know, big thriller typey, or even this other story, which was also very, very different. But Without something at stake, and it's not even just the overall big stakes of like the storyline stake matters, but in every scene something's going to be at stake, and it doesn't. You don't want to drive it home with a sledgehammer. You know, it's very, very fine chiseling that's going on there. But it's so the reader doesn't forget why we're doing this. Why are we in this? Why do we want her to succeed? Why do we care whether she wins or loses? Because without any of that, it's just falls flat. And all of those different, the caring and all that, that's where the tension comes from, and that's what stakes are.
And you mentioned that it wasn't there in the first draft of the young adult novel. It came in later. Typically, if you were writing the young adult novel again now, where would that go in? Would it go in when we go back to these layers that we talked about in that two-part series? Would that be in the first draft where you're just laying out the action?
No.
Okay, so that's coming in later.
Yeah, and you know, like we've talked about before, but maybe not all readers have caught up to this point, is that I wrote that book very differently because I just wrote it in my spare minutes here or there. It wasn't like a consistent thing. So it wasn't, it didn't get the same attention that most of my stories get. And one of the aspects that was missing was a lot of that third, really in-depth, fine brushstroke layers that I just didn't, I was just in a different place mentally writing one of those versus writing these Monroe stories, which were so dark and foreboding and everything. So it was a good, a lot of what I do is by the seat of my pants in the sense that it's instinctual. And that was a very good awakening teaching moment for me in a non-instinctual way. In other words, now you know with words, this is what works and what doesn't. So when I come upon it again, I'm not sitting there going, why, what's wrong here? I know now, are the stakes high enough? Is there enough emotion in this? That type of a thing.
All right. Now, how can we ramp up the stakes in our call to action today?
Oh, boy, I don't like threats, Steve. I don't think it would be a good idea for me to do that to my listeners, because that would be...
I don't think we should put you in physical jeopardy. Maybe emotional jeopardy.
Does guilt and bribery work very well these days?
All right, so we have this new part of Taylor's website, which is taylorstevensbooks.com. If you click on the podcast link, that will take you to a page that's actually a different website. It just doesn't look like it, or it'll kind of look like it, but you'll see what I mean when you do this, and it'll list all the shows, and we'll be able to really expand on the show notes and make the information that we're delivering there a lot more interesting. We'll also have buttons where you can share it on Twitter or Facebook or, you know, whatever your social media platform of choice is, and we'll have cool-looking images there that make it easy to share. And the other thing that I'm really excited about, because we mention things all the time during the interview, we'll mention a book, like we mentioned Sean Coyne's book, or a friend of Taylor's might have written a book, and she might mention that, and we use it as an example. And we've never had enough space in our show notes to be able to link to any of that, and now we can.
Yay!
So the call to action this week is to go check it out. And you can
To share it.
And to share. Yes. But first you have to find it. So you go to Taylor's website, which is taylorstevensbooks.com, and click on the podcast link at the top. Or we have a redirect link. Just go to taylorstevensshow.com. And there's two S's in Stevens Show. TAYLORSTEVENSSHOW.com. And that will redirect to that same page. And we hope you check it out, and we hope you like it. You can even leave comments on the show.
Oh, my gosh, this is so exciting, because I'll actually get to see those.
And I can say that having done like 8 gazillion podcast episodes now, people don't generally leave comments, but we would love it if you would leave comments.
I would.
Because that would be fun.
It would be. Guys, please show me you love me. I want to leave comments.
All right, now we have ramped up the emotional stakes.
Oh, pouting is how you do that now.
Okay, I'm gonna make a note of that to add pouting to my manuscript. We'll be back next week with another great episode of The Taylor Stevens Show that you can find at taylorstevensshow.com.
See you guys next week.